Welcome to Under Lock and Key, news and commentary about prisons from the Revolutionary Anti-Imperialist League and the Maoist Internationalist Movement. Corrupt Union guards terrorize Soledad State Prison, Mamiya Abu-Jamal discusses police corruption, and Ohio prisoners' right of repression and resistance. The U.S. incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other country, sending more black men to prison than college. The purpose of this program is to educate about and inspire activism against the American lockdown. The California Correctional Peace Officers Association, the prison guard union in California, has become very influential, if not the most powerful union in the state. It has managed to do this by donating large sums of money to the Democratic Party to help elect California Governor Davis. In exchange for their support, Governor Davis has secured better benefits for the union and has enacted laws which only benefit prison guards. Working hand in hand, the governor and the union are violating the human and civil rights of California prisoners with impunity. At Soledad State Prison, great injustices and extreme oppression are taking place on a daily basis. This is partially due to an incompetent administration, but more directly due to corrupt guards who act like thugs and who engage in activities that arguably could be prosecuted under the RICO Act. At the DAD, as Soledad was known in the old days when it was on the map, there are a number of problems that the general population must endure daily, such as living conditions and the treatment of prisoners. Of particular concern is the fact that at this facility, ventilation is inadequate. Unlike other prisons in California, Soledad has no central air or swamp cooler. It has only one small window for all seasons. This lack of adequate ventilation promotes diseases such as tuberculosis. Prison administrators know this, but rather than fix the overcrowding problem, they continue to promote a deadly environment by packing prisoners in cells designed for only single occupancy. During lockdown situations, flooding in the housing units exposes prisoners to health hazards created by free-flowing urine and fecal matter. This sewage atmosphere generates and spreads viruses and bacteria responsible for such diseases as hepatitis, E. coli, and typhoid. Instead of the administration taking steps to improve and correct the situation, they seek to punish prisoners by violating their human and civil rights. Because the guards have to do the cleaning up during flooding conditions, they get even by setting up and serving uncovered food in the same areas which were just flooded. This conduct cannot be in compliance with established health and welfare standards. It also constitutes a great injustice. Another great injustice is the constant harassment of prisoners by union guards. For instance, designated guards stand outside the prison law library determined to harass prisoners who litigate against prison officials or guards who violate their constitutional rights. There is presently a well-known female officer who has been the subject of numerous complaints for her harassment of minority prisoners and litigators in general. In one instance, she kept denying a prisoner who had a legal deadline access to the law library for over a 2-week period. She also wrote false reports on him. She did all this because the prisoner had a pending lawsuit against her. Unable to persuade him to drop the lawsuit, she sought and got help from the president of the local union to intimidate and threaten the prisoner. When all this failed, she proceeded to accuse the prisoner of assaulting her and managed to have him placed in the hole. The prisoner spent 2 months in the hole before the allegations were dropped and the serious rule violation was classified instead as an informational chrono, stating that he had manifested conduct that was conducive to violence. Despite the numerous complaints filed against this female officer, upper management allows her to continue on her rampage because she has the backing of the union and she cannot be touched. Certain union members act as enforcers who threaten and intimidate prisoners, write false reports, and use code phrases such as conduct conducive to violence very loosely when dealing with life prisoners because of the prejudice it promotes when appearing before the Board of Prison Terms. They know that these types of chronos cannot be removed from your file. Keep in mind that these guards are not psychologists or mental health experts qualified to speculate on human behavior. These types of allegations on the part of prison guards are nothing more than pure fraud and should be subject to criminal prosecution. Situations like these cannot continue to go unreported. They must be investigated and stopped, or they will lead to greater abuses and the jeopardy of prisoners' lives. Governor Gray Davis has made statements to the press that would lead one to believe that he thinks he is above the law. He has vowed that prisoners convicted of murder will not leave prison unless in a pine box. He has instituted a no-parole policy that violates the state and federal constitutions. He has made it clear that he expects the judiciary to promote his vision or to resign. The California Correctional Peace Officers Association has given Governor Davis over $2.5 million in campaign contributions. They flaunt this arrogantly, and no wonder. This tough-on-crime rhetoric translates into job security for the guards. They love it, and they love him. But the world needs to know that these guards are not law enforcement officers, but members of an organized crime syndicate hiding behind a peace officer's badge. Recently, the president of the San Quentin Guard Union chapter was arrested and charged with narco-trafficking and possession of a controlled substance. The union's response to this embarrassment was to state that the allegations have not been proven. But the same cannot be said about the well-documented instances of guard union corruption in Corcoran, Pelican Bay, Calipatria, and Susanville, which have been prosecuted as criminal offenses. The California Guard Union carries out its criminal enterprise under the guise of security concerns. They circumvent constitutional requirements in the treatment of prisoners through this catch-all language, and they must be exposed for that. In a few moments, we'll bring you a commentary by Mamia Abu-Jamal. Mamia is a Black Nation revolutionary fighting for his life on Pennsylvania's death row. Mamia was framed for the murder of a police officer because he is an outspoken opponent of American imperialism. This Mamia Abu-Jamal commentary was recorded by Bruderhof Radio. Bruderhof Radio can be contacted at www.freespeech.org/Bruderhof or via the phone numbers 1-800-778-8361 or area code 914-658-8351.
Every day, a cop places a hand on the Bible, swears to tell the truth, and lies with utter abandon in a courtroom in every city in America. The judge doesn't blink, the prosecutor doesn't stutter, and the so-called justice system swallows another body to the labyrinth. There's even a word for it, testa-lying. What has occurred in Los Angeles in recent months has only shown a sliver of light on a department-wide and indeed nationwide practice. Why does it occur? For the simplest reason ever. It works. A recent LA Times piece covers a wide range of overt injustices in daily practice. The big question is, do the police regularly lie? Some police administrators and legal commentators believe that police often tell small lies, mostly to justify unlawful searches, involving claims that officers saw a defendant drop drugs on the ground when an officer actually turned them up in a search of the defendant, or because he merely saw the drugs lying near the defendant and inferred that they belonged to him. That, the LA Times. As the scandal arising from the LAPD Rampart Division spreads, people are finally beginning to question the words of sworn officers. Theoretically, the sight of a uniformed, decorated cop on the stand, hands raised to be sworn, is proof positive to most jurors that the truth is about to be uttered. Theory, however, is rarely practice. This was revealed in the infamous Serpico police corruption hearings in the 1970s era New York, the later Mullen Commission hearings in corruption 2 decades later, the Christopher Commission hearings in L.A., and now the widening Rampart Division scandals, and what of the 39th District in Philadelphia? Decade after decade, scandal after scandal, commission after commission. And what has changed? In city after city, in case after case, cops take the stand and say whatever is necessary to ensure convictions. Judges, prosecutors, and juries alike see and understand what they are seeing, but it matters little. In a culture based on demonization, anything goes. And thus begins the process of the prison industrial complex. In LA alone, cases have come out involving cop violence, rampant criminality, perjury, and murder. Cops there have pulled drug heists, have then turned around and sold drugs, have shot and killed unarmed men, and then went to court, sworn on their Bible, and lied like shameless whores. Is this new? Not by a long shot. And the DAs, the judges, the public defenders, the mayor, city council, and other public officials know about it, yet they turn their head and close their eyes. The cops are not the problem. They are the symptom of a total systemic disease, one which sacrifices the poor, the Mexican, the African American, and the powerless to the system. It is in this context, then, that one must examine the rising incidence and severity of cop violence. Why do we speak of police brutality? Why not call it what it is? It is police terrorism. And the state is not a solution to the problem. Indeed, it is the problem. The poor, the black and Chicano, are subjected to this campaign of terror to keep them contained in the ghettos of the community. But we view the violence of that state far differently from retail violence, as activist Larvester Gaither points out in the book called States of Confinement, published recently by St. Martin's Press. I quote, "In recent years, reports of police brutality have become routine. Yet most of the corporate-owned media has focused on hate groups such as the Ku Klux Klan or the Aryan Nation. This has largely obscured police brutality and racism within the criminal justice system. By situating anti-black vigilantism and state-sanctioned violence in the same framework, we can better devise strategies that allow us to move one step closer to, without moving two steps backward from, the solution." Unquote. We will hear, no doubt, of a new and improved police commission to study the latest reign of police criminality, and it'll be equally as successful as those of the past. It is important for us to understand the role of the cops, as they serve not the people, but the rulers. Indeed, they admit as much. Think of the last time that there was a shooting of a so-called citizen by the cops. What do they say? "We were just doing our jobs." Act like you know. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
This is a letter from a prisoner in Ohio. Let me give you the lowdown on Youngstown. I've been here for less than a month, and the prison has been open for less than a year, and already the guards have killed a prisoner. Of course, they claim it was suicide. This prison is situated in a circle, or a circle inside of a square, and I'm in a block which holds 16 hostages, 8 on the top range and 8 on the bottom range. Now, we're not supposed to have contact with other prisoners, but we can holler at least a few cells by yelling out the window in the rec pod, and we can talk to prisoners in one cell through the air vents. Plus, we can pass around mem notes by shooting a line under our doors. The guards have a tendency of putting prisoners in the shower and leaving them there for 2 or 3 hours. One day last week, a prisoner kicked out the shower door, and the guards reacted by taking all the prisoner's property, everything from the TV that the institution issues, to his sheets and his blankets. There's no hole at this super maximum prison, as the whole thing is a control unit. Plus, they moved all the prisoners out of that cell block to somewhere over in C unit, except the prisoner who kicked out the window for the next couple of days. I could hear him banging on the door, demanding his sheets and blankets, which is very understandable, being that this is the middle of winter. From the little strip of a window in my cell, I could see the parking lot of the prison, and one morning I happened to see the local news team out in the parking lot. This was also the first morning since the incident that I didn't hear any banging coming from up there. On that news that night, live from Ohio State Prison, the prison officials explained how this prisoner was supposed to have hung himself. Nowhere in the explanation was there mention that they were going through some changes with this prisoner, or the fact that he was in a cell block all by himself. It was a letter from an Ohio prisoner. This letter is also from a prisoner in Ohio. "I have read the materials you sent about forming a study group. Most of this I was familiar with from reading the essential works of Chinese communism, but this material did stress the importance of having a correct analysis of the particular situation that the struggle is taking place in. Attempting to organize inside of these prisons is like attempting to carry out armed struggle within an imperialist country. Once you are accused, you may have a few sympathizers, but there's nothing that anybody can do for you. It's not surprising that people out there in society cannot understand what it's like to be in a supermax prison. It's unimaginable to prisoners in lower security prisons, and most of the prisoners in Ohio's supermax are not handling it mentally. Even in lower security prisons here in Ohio, any prisoner caught walking out in the yard in a group of 3 or more will receive a conduct report. However, I can write articles for any newspaper that you can come up with because we must agitate and educate. I can't volunteer to help edit, because any material that is sent to me is subject to confiscation. I wouldn't want anyone to lose their work. But any literature that you send, and that we actually receive, can be passed around without too much trouble." This was a letter from a prisoner in Ohio. This has been Under Lock and Key, a revolutionary anti-imperialist league and Maoist internationalist movement program about prisons. For more information, contact RAIL, P.O. Box 712, Amherst, Massachusetts 01004, or email radio@mim.org.